If you're listening to this, there's a good chance you work within the real estate investing industry. There's another good chance that you would like to increase the sales of your products or services.
Well, you're in the right place.
United States Real Estate Investor is a platform you need to place your brand directly in front of your target audience. With our focused, growing audience of real estate investing beginners, enthusiasts, and seasoned professionals, you can continually reach our captivated viewers and listeners with ease. To learn more or to get started today, just visit UnitedStatesRealEstateInvestor.com/advertising. That's UnitedStatesRealEstateInvestor.com/advertising. Get ready to increase your brand awareness and your bottom line. Attract clients with content.
All right, welcome to this month in real estate investing, guys. So this month we're going to cover multiple news items. The top three that I picked: Shark Tank star reveals bold real estate predictions, no room at the dorm as college begins, some students are scrambling for housing, and New York City Airbnb listings vanish as regulations tighten. All this and more on this episode of This Month in Real Estate Investing. Let's start the show. Okay, I'm your host, James Brown, and I teach people how to make double-digit returns through safe, secure, stress-tested real estate investments. Go to hybridinvestor.vip to learn more. If you're watching live, feel free to comment and ask questions. Antonio, our producer, will throw them in the chat for us, and we can reply. So our guests today are Scott Royal Smith, Matt Thoreau, assuming that's right, and David Richter. Did I get that right, Matt?
As close as Terrio.
Terrio.
Stereo without the S. There you go.
All right. Messing me up.
You're good.
All right. Cool. Well, hey, in that order that I just named you guys, go ahead and introduce yourself and share your background and what types of investing you guys focus on, so we just have an idea of where you're coming from when we dive into the news.
Yeah, so my name is Scott Royal Smith. I'm an asset protection attorney and real estate investor, and I actually bought my first property for $10,000 in back taxes while I was in law school. So like a commercial building and auto transmission repair shop. Since then, I scaled into single family homes, did land investing, syndication work, note investing, pretty much the full gamut. And my company then assists real estate investors on how to do everything for their asset protection, estate planning, tax, insurance, strategic portfolio analysis, the full gamut of what's there. I've been doing that for about 11 years now.
Oh, cool.
Cool. I'm up. Matt Terrio, Epic Real Estate, and we show busy professionals how to invest in real estate to build a passive income portfolio so they can retire early. And we kind of have two heads to our business. Either we'll do it for them because they are too busy or don't have the desire to do all the heavy lifting. And we do that at cashflowsavvy.com. Or we'll show them how to do it themselves. And that's what the part that I lead over here. And that's over at Epic Earn While You Learn. And I got involved in real estate in a really weird way. Right when I got out of the Marine Corps, I spent the next 15 years of my life in the music business. The digital download came along and just kind of killed the whole music store thing. And, you know, I found myself bagging groceries at the age of 34, really missed my money. And someone said, hey, if you want money, go to real estate. And I was like, all right, got to learn something new. Might as well choose the thing that pays the most. And that's what I did. And I made a huge investment in my, I started as an agent, made a huge investment in my investing education. And here we are now. Now I've been in real estate longer than I was in the music business. So that's where we're at.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I like Matt a lot. I know Matt personally, so he's a good guy. Not that I don't know the other one. I can't get can't wait to find out more about Scott and then James as well too. But I'm David Richter. I'm Simple CFO. I own that company. It's a fractional CFO company that if you're making money but feeling broke, that's who we help. So a lot of people, the way I started in real estate, I bought my first house on 12-12-12, then been a part of about 850 single family deals since then of all walks of life, wholesale, retail, wholesale, lease options, rentals, things like that. And we built that company to be doing about 25 deals a month. But at one point we were doing 25 deals a month, but spending 26 worth. So that sucks. So I'm like, we got to do something different here. And that took me down a rabbit hole of reading the book Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. I started the company Simple CFO because I learned that it wasn't just us in that predicament, that a lot of people were making money in real estate, but then saying, where the heck is my money? Where's it all going? I don't have anything to show for it. So that's why I opened up the company to provide clarity. We implement the Profit First cash flow methodology to tell your money where it's going and make sure you keep more of it. And I actually sold my portfolio and everything to start this business, to get into it, because I knew that this was something that a lot of people needed, and it's exploded. We've got about 35 CFOs on the team working with over 150 real estate investors on a monthly basis that want to keep more of the money that they're making. And that's at simplecfo.com. And that's my intro to real estate and what I'm doing now.
All right. Fantastic. I know, David, you and I and Toby, my business partner, jumped on a call after I'd seen one of your presentations. I was like, wow, this is much needed for a lot of real estate professionals. So
yeah, I appreciate that, James.
Yeah.
That whole philosophy is probably the most transformational thing I've ever done in my business. And I'm sad that I discovered it 12 years after I was actually in business.
Right. I hear that all the time. That's why I'm like, just trying to get out there in front of people as early as possible, wherever they are right now, so they don't have to say that 12 years from now.
Well, thank God for you, Dave.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Matt.
You bet.
Right on. Well, thanks, guys, for being here today. Let's dive into the news. So the first one from Insider, the title is, there are way too many real estate agents.
Do you need to go any further? Or is that like, that's it, right? There's just way too
many. That's just a statement, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Just kidding. You can go in.
Well, Matt and I think we're the only licensed agents on the show, right?
I'm no longer have my license. No.
Oh, you don't have it?
No. Gotcha. Yeah, me either.
Oh, you did too, Scott?
Yeah. I mean, I had it at one time, but eventually you just run out of time to be able to do anything that's like retail based like that.
Yeah. That's what I struggle with. I'm like, I try to rely on in my business on other agents, especially going and finding properties open and doors. That's time consuming. Right. So I'm like, something's got to give. But it's good, I find, just having the base knowledge of the business, and then also for networking with other agents is really helpful. Back to the focus of that article, there are a lot of agents, but with the way rates have gone and just the slowing of the market, it's just taken a dive. So many people are getting out.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of people like ended up entering the market as real estate agents because there's such a big boom, right? So then they was like shooting fish in a barrel to be able to collect commission checks. Mm-hmm. And trust me, I don't mind people making money, like go where the easy money's at, right? But then like the market shifts, and then we have like there's too many, right? Now it's like oversupply of people doing the work that's there. And I think this is one of the things that probably like all of us here on this call are familiar with, right? It's like, what do you do if you're an agent and you're in that kind of situation? And what I see, and maybe something that's interesting to talk about here, is like, what's that shift, right? Because the shifts that I see is, okay, well, then you need to differentiate. You need to start adding more value and like what you're doing, right? So if you're an agent and you're in that kind of position, or then it's the time to start being able to say, like, do you actually know how to like strategically consult people about what kinds of deals they should be getting into, right? Or do you know other aspects to what they want with their wealth building? Because people are like, okay, great, do I want to buy a house? But they don't really want to buy a house, right? They want something else. They either want like financial freedom at the end of it because they're a real estate investor. They want some type of security. They want some type of like foundation with their family. And if you can chunk up the skill sets that you have there, then that's how you differentiate yourself in that kind of market. And then we're not like, oh, there's too many agents and it's like such a glut and this is so bad. You're like, no, this is the perfect opportunity for everybody that says, great, you built the baseline of the skill sets that you need on like sales and understanding the industry in an asset class. And now it's the time to increase your learning,
right? Learn, get more segmented with who you're helping, learn how to solve their problems deeper, and you'll build yourself an actual business. And I'd venture to say that's what probably all of us here did at one point or another, as we got forced into it the same way that everybody else here that's an agent inside of the big pool is kind of being forced into it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when I made my transition from real estate agent to real estate investor, it was because I had a real estate investor as a client, and it was the best client I'd ever had. I went through the traditional way of cold calling and door knocking and calling expireds and holding open houses and doing all those things that new agents have to do to drum up their business. And so I know how hard it was to find a client and get deals done at that time. And when I had an investor walked into my open house one day, which they walk in all the time, and you just like, I know agents, they kind of roll their eyes because like either if they want me to represent them as a buyer, they're going to write a bunch of lowball offers, I'm not going to get paid. Or if they want me to list their house, they're going to dig into my commission because they want to increase their profit. So, you know, there's kind of this predisposition that agents have for real estate investors. But this one particular investor, I mean, they just kind of faxed over deals to me, and I would probably do 10 deals a year with that one person, and didn't even have to work for it just because we connected. And what I found that I really had that was unique to all of the other agents was just a work ethic. It was like, I did the work. And if we're talking about, right, the market is shifting and there's too many agents and we're seeing this exodus, it's really funny because, you know, now I'm on the other side of the desk because I wanted to be that person. I didn't want to be the agent. I wanted to do what they were doing. And it's really difficult to find an agent that will do the work as an investor. I'm here in Vegas about 4 years. I've gone through 7 agents already. There's a particular strategy that I did for my last investor that I'm trying to find another agent like me to do it for me. And, you know, that get a cool little run for a little while. And then they, you know, they kind of just like, oh, this is too much rejection for them or whatever it is. They don't want to do the work. And ironically, my wife is getting her license just so I can have somebody that will actually execute that. So I think, you know, if it doesn't take much, I don't think, based off of my experience with the number of agents I worked with, it doesn't take much for you to be an agent and stay in business if you're just actually willing to do the work. But if you come out of a market where, as Scott said, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, then, and now you come into a market where there's not as many fish in that barrel, now you actually have to go fishing and make an effort, then all of a sudden that's a big awakening for people. And yeah, sadly, they're going to have to leave the business and go do something else.
Yeah, no, you know, the pandemic caused a lot of people to have to shift, and they were able to sit at home and, you know, get their license online. So it was like, you know, why not? So there's,
and you'll have to sell one or two houses to make a good, some really good money based on the housing prices now. So you don't have to be super successful real estate agent to have a significant contribution financially to your household.
Yeah. And then that gets the taste, and then it's like, okay, do you want to make this a real business or not? But I don't think anyone ever puts that dividing line in their head of like, okay, I've done a couple deals, or like, in order to do this, I can't shoot the fish in a barrel anymore, so I have to build a system that brings the fish, you know, so I can actually go fishing, or I need to learn. That's where it's like you have to learn from the people that teach the marketing principles. You know, it's like the Dan Kennedys or the Russell Brunson, Alex Hormozi, whoever resonates with you. It's like teaching the actual, okay, here's just principles of things in order to get out there. So I think it's that dividing line of, I'm not just an agent now, I'm a business owner. And how am I going to learn marketing, sales, operations, finance, and making sure I have the right people, systems in place, so it's repeatable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of people get into this business thinking, first of all, they think, oh, it's going to be easy, I'll be able to set my own schedule. But that's the reality is you're kind of at the beck and call, and you've got to be super proactive. And this is a business. It's entrepreneurship. You know, unless you plug into a team and that team has some systems for you to get up and running, it's an uphill battle.
You know, I actually read that article, and they mentioned how the barrier to entry might just be way too low.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. And I think that's absolutely true, because as someone that teaches people how to invest in real estate, there's a number of real estate agents that come through here, and they're probably my very, very worst students. They just can't unlearn what they've learned. Just like the conventional way of buying a house and representing, you know, someone buying their primary residence and just kind of fitting in that nice little box. And there's and I notice that as an educator, but when I'm out as a practitioner, they just get in the way. Like they can't really see past like, oh, we have a problem to solve here. Someone has hired me to help them either buy or sell a property. And if it doesn't look a certain way, it's like, oh, that's illegal, or we don't do that, or, you know, whatever it may be. It's like, no, they've got to have a higher level of education and not be taught, or I don't know how they come across the information where everything is, even anything remotely creative is illegal or a scam or something like that. And then you're sitting there with a listing that expires and you didn't do the job for your agent. So they don't have that. You know, they're taught one way. I think there needs to be much more creative ways. And I think going into what we're going into now, that's going to be an invaluable thing and a very easy way for agents to separate themselves.
Yeah. I teach a class on mainly lease options, you know, but we kind of get into creative financing. Most agents don't know anything about it. And it seems like the worst ones are the ones that have been in the business for 30 years and just been in that real estate agent retail space. So any kind of outside the box stuff that is still legitimate and, you know, legal, they just don't know about it and they're scared about it and they don't even want to touch it. So
I think I see it as a really fundamental problem, right? Mm-hmm. And it relates directly back to the entrepreneurial aspect of it, right? Is what you find in these kinds of situations is, if you're an agent for somebody, right, you're helping facilitate their business. The best thing that you can do is actually learn their business, do their business, right? So when starting Royal Legal Solutions, the only reason that my company was successful is because I was a real estate investor. I also happened to be an attorney and had to run into all the problems the real estate investors ran into. So then it was like a natural extension that like, oh, my company and growing it into the, you know, tax firm, CPA firm, attorney firm, et cetera, like was a natural extension of specializing for investors, but it's particularly real estate investors. And I think this is exactly what agents need to do. If you can find people that will care about you at all, right? Like, let's say if you found like a Matt in your life, right? And you would go to the Matt and you would say, hey, Matt, I want to make you $1 million this year. How can I make you $1 million this year? What do I need to do? What do I need to learn? How am I going to be able to accomplish that for you? Then those types of people, if you come to them with some seriousness, right, and some go-get-it-ness, they'll actually teach you, here's what you need to do. And then you know the business of the person that you're trying to serve, and that makes you really valuable because then you're an extension and like a force multiplier for efforts they would have to do anyway. But that requires having to go do like a bunch of learning, and I think this is where you find people that made money easily is that they're actually not willing to learn. Right? They really just want to find a way to keep making money the same way they always made money. But that doesn't exist anymore. And that's why we all get frustrated on our end, because we're like, well, we actually having money isn't a problem anymore. It's actually finding the right kind of deals. But we need other people that can actually go help be force multipliers for us in finding those deals and doing the business that we actually know that works. Unfortunately, there's so many people that are out there, and most of them are not able to be successful at doing it and don't want to do it really. And so then it becomes frustrating at our end because we're like, well, how many risks do I have to take on people that are going to flunk out, right? That say they want to do it, but they don't really want to do it, you know? And that's the challenge you're on if you're on the other side of the fence, is like really finding somebody that really knows a way to make money, try to offer them a proposition that says, I want to make you a ton of money if you're willing to teach me. And then three, like show up every day, all day for at least a year to be like, I'm going to make you money. And then through that, you're actually going to learn a business, and that's the way you're going to be able to excel in times that are like these, from what I've seen.
Yep, 100%. Hey, let's keep things moving and get to the next news item. From CNBC, foreign buyers are bailing on the U.S. housing market. Anybody have any comments on that?
Is that I took a look at all of these articles in advance. I read the summaries. And I couldn't really determine whether is that the foreign buyers, is that like just individual citizens that are buying their houses and investment properties, or is it, you know, institutions overseas buying? Because I'd have two different opinions on that.
Gotcha. I know some of them were primary home buyers, which was kind of a shift to some Chinese buyers coming over as residents. And then there were individual property buyers, but I don't know about institutional. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's kind of weird to put foreign buyers as just like, are we against, you know, foreigners buying real estate? Right? Because you know, if they're coming over here for the American dream, then, you know, then yeah, that's why not? But if it's, you know, I've never researched this. I've just heard like, oh, China owns, you know, 3/4 of all the farmland in the United States. Like that would be like a different conversation, right?
Yeah. Well, we've talked about it on this show. There's some news that came up where, let's see, Antonio just put a comment. DeSantis is against foreign real estate buyers, Texas governor too. So yeah, we've talked about this, and they are restricting like anywhere near military bases, kind of a safety thing. Because
I guess there's also a classification of just foreigners. Like, are they citizens? Are they on the way to citizenship, right? Or they got a green card, or are they just foreigners? You know what I mean? Like they're just Antonio's investing, not citizens. Got it. Yep. What I always thought was weird was, you know, there's restrictions on us if we want to go to other countries to buy, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like all of a sudden we're bad people because we impose those same restrictions here to protect our interests. I don't know. It's a little above my knowledge base, but you know, there's kind of two different ways to look at it, I guess.
Yeah, there's definitely some push pull there with what rules we're opening up versus.
Well, and
the
I
others.
Think with Maui recently, right? They were like trying to stop real estate investors from just being, you know, preying on, you know, the people that lost their homes, but then also trying to block foreign investors from just buying up a bunch of land too, you know, of coming in and just buying up, you know, tracts of, you know, Hawaii at that point too. So I feel like some of it's good regulation for being able to say, okay, this is a difficult time. Like we need to be able to give the people back their homes that lost them versus, okay, is this an institutional buyer like China, Russia coming in and just buying up the swath of farmland across the U.S. versus, okay, what is the actual regulation if you aren't a United States citizen to buy, you know, a property in the U.S.
No.
Yeah.
I think if the intentions are good, why not? You know?
Yeah.
I guess that's what you have to determine.
Right. Yeah. How do you determine that? Let's jump into the next one from GeekWire. Zillow and Redfin earnings reports reflect slumping real estate market. Redfin's total revenue dropped 21%, and its primary source of revenue, it says, their real estate services division declined over 28%. So that's a big drop, which is kind of reflective of what we're seeing with everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think the question is, why is it slumping?
Right.
I mean, the big thing is rates, right?
Is because, it?
Well, if a seller has a 2 or 3% rate and they're going to sell and go buy something at 7,
right?
They, all of a sudden they lost their buying power, right? And so sellers are just parked. They're not, unless they have to sell, like divorce or a job transfer or something, they're not moving. And then the buyers, they're also like, well, I can't buy as much as I could before. And they, all the buyers are thinking, well, I'll just wait until the rates drop, and maybe they will, but then they're going to get into bidding wars again and have to bump up the price. So it's, man, this difference in rates has really just put the brakes on everything.
It has definitely the rates. That's the big variable. But one thing that's not a variable, what is constant, is that, you know, after 2007 all the way through 2018, 19, really, there's a huge deficit in building. Mm-hmm. And we have a huge surge in the home buying age of our population. So the supply and demand is so out of whack, like either something's going to have to happen to create some space for people to put a roof over their head, or people are gonna have to change the way that they live. You know, if you look at the crash, and a lot of people think, oh, we're going to crash like 2007, 2008. There's a significant difference between 2007, mm-hmm. where we had more houses than we had people at home buying age. And right now, here we are, what, 15 years later, the exact opposite. Yep. We have many more people than we have home buying age. And the stat that I've been, I don't know what the exact number is, and I might misquote this, but you'll still get the point, is that, you know, we have the peak age of the millennial right now, I believe, is 34 years old, the peak age of that population. And the average age of the first time home buyer is 36. So over the next 24 months, we have more people moving through home buying age than this country has ever seen. And that's on top of a 10-year deficit in building. And mm-hmm. So, yes, interest rates, the big variable, and that's the only thing I would say like would affect my prediction. But if that wasn't the case, I think real estate is only going up, and it can only go up.
Yep.
I do think it's interesting on the article, they say that, you know, the rental are going up, like the rental revenue, and because of all that's going on with the interest rates, that, you know, that it says here, this is crazy. The U.S. market added 376,000 apartment units, the most in the last three decades in the first half of the year. So it's like more rentals are coming on the market, and it's pushed from rental prices to come down. So rentals now can become more affordable than, you know, housing was. Wait, I was just having this conversation with my wife, I think it was yesterday, where we were just talking, and I said 2 years ago it would have been cheaper for us to go out and buy a house, but it's now with the market we're in, we live in Florida. I'm like, it's just as cost effective for us to rent, and like some of the stuff that we have here versus going out and buying a house now and not using creative financing and locking it in for a 2 or 3% interest rate. But if I went out there and bought a retail, so I'm like, that's also a big decision factor for, you know, me, myself personally, but for a lot of people, I think. If you're a landlord investor, that would be over the next year or so. This is a great time to buy, hold, and then be able to provide the rental. And where most people before were trying to jump in at the 2 to 3%, you might be able to capture some of that market and say, okay, now the rental pool might be bigger. So I think it's a very interesting what they put in this article, where it's the most in the last three decades in the first half here of the year.
Yep. Scott, you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of the things that you're going to – it's an ebb and flow, right, with, like, supply. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just really important when we look at, you know, how are we going to make, like, a business out of what's happening, right? Like, this is why we see, like, hey, well, why is there a big glut with real estate agents? Well, probably because a lot of times they're trying to look at a lot of the buy side of things. Not to say they can't start doing like wholesaling or still trying to find like those people that have like divorce issues or other issues that are saying like, hey, I got to sell. I got to move. I think that's a great this is a great opportunity to move into that area because those are always there. You just have to improve your sales and marketing skills to be able to get into there. But otherwise, you know, what I see here is like, hey, this is a great opportunity to start creating systems and processes around rental real estate. Right. And helping people be able to find, you know, what is that home that they're going to get into for renting. The unfortunate part is if you got used to making really easy money on the buy and sell of a piece of property, you're really not that excited as like a 1 month's rent. Right. It's like so much less money that you really have to retool your thinking around like, what is it going to be a good business here for me?
Yeah. A comment in the chat says multiple large apartment complexes have been built here in Reno within the last 6 months, which is reflective of Denver, where I am at. I mean, it's been the city of cranes for 10 years, you know? There's just massive complexes going up everywhere.
There's also realtor.com right in the middle of COVID that kind of demonstrated very eloquently and specifically on this deficit of building that we've had. And it said it will take a decade for us to catch up just to be back to a normal housing market. And so, I mean, everyone's on the right track. Builders are up. I mean, we're doing a property tour here with the new home builder. We got an exclusive on it, and they're providing all of these investor incentives financing incentives to make it easy for investors to buy. And the builder confidence just had a huge spike last month. And so I think the builders are like, oh gosh, there's more people. So I think it's all going in that direction, but it's going to be a while before just the numbers before it levels out to be in a normal market.
Yep.
And if you can control the supply in that type of environment, you kind of got control over your future. If there's that much demand and you've got control of the supply. So, you know, whether you're building apartment buildings or you're building you know, single families, or you're just an investor like us who goes out and locks properties up and you get control of it in a number of different ways, you know, I think that's probably represents good, really good job security over the next 10 to 15 years.
Matt, can I ask you a quick question about that? Because I was wondering about in the scenario that says, you know, we have some type of like economic contraction where then we have an increase, or, you know, we start having like more joblessness, right? People mm-hmm. stop losing some of the employment. I don't have a crystal ball, right? I don't think anybody does about like if any of that is actually going to happen, but it's been on like a top of mind concern that it seems like some heavy hitting like investors are betting that at some point here, we're going to have a major contraction. Mm-hmm. I was wondering about like in your analysis, there's like controlling the supply, if that impacts it at all, because even though people would want to be able to go buy a home, they literally don't have the job. So they have to move back home and they have to consolidate the number of people they have underneath a single roof to afford rents. Mm-hmm. Or is it your interpretation that says nobody has a crystal ball, so you just got to do whatever is the best thing you can do anyway. This is what the economics are telling us that we need to do now. So we should just move forward with that.
Mm-hmm. So you're right. I don't have one, but if I did, I could use the supply and demand dynamic as probably the closest thing we've got to one. It's, you know, if you look at say like a Lee Iacocca who rescued Chrysler, right? He just looked at the demographics of the baby boomers. They're all starting families. Like, they're going to need something to haul all their kids around. So let's just invent a minivan, right? And that saved the whole business or the company just by analyzing that. And you can go back all through history and look at all the baby boomers, how they impacted every single industry. Like Gerber baby food came out of the baby boomers being born. You know, Levi Strauss and the Mustang, Ford Mustang got really popular when they were teenagers. You know, and then they became then Chrysler noticed the family thing. We got the minivan. And now if you're investing into assisted living or senior recreation, I mean, there's such a huge demand there too. So now that you've got a bigger portion of the population aging and being interested in all those exact same things, I think that could be a reasonable, if there is such thing as a crystal ball, that could probably be the closest thing to it because we've seen it happen before. But now we've got this bigger ball moving down this water hose, you know, and it's going to impact each one of those industries depending on or in correlation with their age. So, and then as far as the economic contraction goes, I mean, there's a lot of people, really smart people, much smarter than me on both sides of that saying yes and no. Right now, there's really no indicators pointing to it. Because, I mean, if you look at how recessions go with the employment thing, I mean, it's still on a downward momentum as far as unemployment goes. So those types of numbers aren't pointing to it yet. But I will say the doomsdayers, they'll be right eventually, right? But I can sit here and say it's not going to happen, and that would be foolish to say. But in the short term, unless just something catastrophic outside of housing happens, then you know, I could be wrong there. But as far as just the basic supply and demand dynamics, I don't see it.
Yeah, I feel you, man. It's like if you just watch the main supply and demands, that's your best. Like that's the tide that's going to raise all the ships mm-hmm. into it. And then if there's going to be a meteor that strikes the Earth, nobody's going to see that anyway.
Right? Yeah, we're going to have bigger fish to fry, right? Right. Like, no one's really going to care about their rentals. And if you look at, you know, Kiyosaki, he's been saying it. He said 2015, we are going to implode. And here we are almost 9 years later, and he's still saying it next year. So eventually he's going to be right. But, you know.
Yeah. And he's got to improve his economic tarot cards. Yeah. I look a little bit off. Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads into the next article. Shark Tank star reveals bold real estate prediction. So we're talking to Barbara Corcoran. If anybody's a fan of Shark Tank, they know who she is. So she expects a surge in housing prices, variations in prices across different locations, it says, and a potential recovery in the commercial market, which we've talked about a lot on this show.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't really have anything additional to add to what she's saying, other than what I thought was interesting about that article was that she's actually predicting interest rates to come back down again.
Mm.
So that's a pretty bold prediction. I don't know anyone right. that's really predicting that right now. And if that happens, then she's 100% right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the most surprising thing as I was reading through that. I'm like, she's predicting to come back down. It doesn't seem like it's going to come back down anytime soon with what the trend has been for the last year. So
yeah, wonder where she gets her info. And you know, she is an entertainer.
Yes.
So like a lot of the news that we cover, right? There's a lot of hype and
yeah. I had her on my podcast probably 6 years ago or so. And it was interesting for me to learn, because I was like, well, it's a real estate podcast. Hey, we've got a new real estate celebrity. Let's bring her on. And I was really excited that she said yes. And it was a great interview and everything. But I was really surprised to learn that she had essentially been out of the real estate business for 20 years. I interviewed her. So I don't know what her connection or association with the industry is now, but I learned that one. That was one of the most surprising things I learned from that interview.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. I know she has her own brokerage, right?
She sold it though 20 years ago.
Right. She sold it.
That's my point.
She's hands off now, huh?
Yeah.
Just using the name. Gotcha. I didn't realize.
It's like a lot of these guys, right? It's like they built a brand. Their brand is actually just like part of their marketing funnel. Yeah. And they just continue to push inside of their marketing funnel, whatever it is, but they're not actually doing the day-to-day anymore of like what it is to be like in the trenches. Unfortunately, some of the best information always, it comes from the most boring of sources. It's like the census, you know, and you're like, geez, I got to read the census. This is terrible.
Right.
You know, but like that'll give you actually, you know, some of
the data
info.
The hard
I know it's the same thing with a lot of these guys, like, you know, Kiyosaki. I'm always wondering about, you know, how much real estate is Kiyosaki really in the day to day of what's going on. Right. I mean, they play it at such a different level that none of us typically ever even touch to know what's happening. But they still need a brand presence that drives everything there. So they still talk about the same things we're talking about. But I would just take anything that a celebrity says with a grain of salt.
Yeah, 100%.
This could be the wisest words we've said so far.
Hey, you're going to make me blush. Stop it.
That's good.
I just looked in the public chat. Richard Roop was on last month, and he's watching the show.
Hey, Richard.
Richard.
Richard, what's up? All right. Let's see what the next – oh, let's take our ad break here from one of our sponsors.
Hey, it's me, Antonio Holman, founder of United States Real Estate Investor and producer of This Month in Real Estate Investing. Are you ready to ignite your financial freedom with what has been called the hottest REI strategy around, or should I say strategies? Enter Jason Palliser's 2-day investment blueprint, where you will learn the secrets that the real estate investing community doesn't know because they never had a reason to before. With Jason's 2-day investment blueprint, you will learn how to tackle real estate deals with over 40 different strategies, which means your chances of losing another deal nearly disappears completely. In Jason's 2-day life transformation intensive, you will learn how to generate more deals, close deals faster, win more deals over other investors, multiply your real estate deal strategies, and much more. Jason's 2-day investment blueprint can help you grow your REI business to 6 and 7 figures faster with much less aggravation. If you want to learn how to invest in any market in the United States, even the tough markets, and close multiple deals per month, visit 2dayblueprint.com. That's the number 2dayblueprint.com. And make sure you tell them you heard it here on This Month in Real Estate Investing. Don't believe the no more good deals hype and visit 2dayblueprint.com today. Now back to James with This Month in Real Estate Investing.
All right. From United States Real Estate Investor, cyber attack on Rapitoni, a blow to real estate listing across the U.S. I guess there was a ransomware attack on these guys, and it left hundreds of thousands of agents nationwide in limbo with their listings. I hadn't heard about this, but it just definitely raised questions about the security of real estate websites and stuff. I don't know what you guys feel. It seems like there's a lack of adopting tech in our industry. Some better than others, right? And I think the ones that are adopting it are going to be way ahead of the game.
I think it's all migrating towards the blockchain anyway, isn't it? After like all the records and that type of stuff. But yeah, gosh, we've seen a lot of vulnerabilities in that technology as well. So, but other than that, I can't speak on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually took a CE class, continuing education class on blockchain. There's a lot of good that can come out of it as long as they can keep it locked down. And I mean, it's designed to give us more security, but also speed up transactions. And
yeah, if you want to talk about thinning the herd of the real estate agent, that's supposedly supposed to do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that. Because, I mean, as you know, there's a lot of things that pop up in a real estate transaction. And it just, you can't automate everything, right? And there's the human factor constantly, which, I mean, half of my job is, you know, being a therapist.
Right, right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, we run into it a lot. So like the core thrust of my company is actually inside of protection oriented measures, right? Like how do you hide assets using trust, protect using LLCs and things like that, right? But one of the key pieces that we talk about is how like insurance is one of those areas where you always want insurance, but you never like rely on insurance companies because it's just the nature of the insurance business is they collect premiums and deny coverage. And that's how they make money, the nature of it. But what I'm seeing more and more through like our clients that are coming through is that people, and this article triggers it for me, is one of the things that people are getting more and more keen to saying, like, I want varying types of insurance coverage that I didn't know of before, right? So like inside of like the cyber protection or business continuity insurance, those types of things that like typically, I don't know, 10 years ago, I'd be like, I don't need anything like that, that these become more apparent. With people saying like, "Hey, well, it the cost of not having something there now has become really high, even if it's only going to happen like once out of maybe every like 20 years that it's going to impact me." It's harder for people to think in terms of like long term scales like that because most people are so so keen on like the immediate bottom line. But it is something I'm seeing more and more that people, which I think is encouraging, right? I think more people get to where they want to go in terms of like the financial freedom or the wealth they want to create through real estate when they can have better long-term plans that create more stability inside of the ups and downs in markets and that the insurance is definitely part of that. So I just think this is like one of those like key areas that says it doesn't just happen to large companies. It's happening to individuals all the time, and that it's just important to have proper insurance in place, even if it's only used once out of every 10 years, once out of 20 years. Like those things help keep the gray hairs away.
Yep, we've talked about it on the show quite a bit, and I just ran into, we've got a property in Florida we're looking to buy, and like State Farm apparently is pulled out of Florida completely. I think there's a couple others. So then I was getting quotes from whoever was hanging in there. Price is pretty high. I know the last one we did in Florida, that was kind of a shocker. Like, oh, we didn't calculate in enough for insurance, flood insurance, you know, in most places in Florida. So.
The insurance companies, don't they count on not having to pay? And then when something happens and they have to pay, they're like, oh, we're not going to go there no more because we have to pay out.
Right.
And you have to do what we say we're going to do.
That's the whole deal, right? And then what they typically do is that then they do like blanket denials of all of the claims and then they end up like in lawsuits. Uh-huh. That's really what you end up with having like high value insurance in place is you end up having to sue your own insurance company, which is why you want to have an umbrella policy is because you want enough like juice there to squeeze if you have to turn around and sue your own insurance company because they improperly denied a claim because you need millions of dollars to go after them for in that circumstance. So like it's all one big game, right? That we're all playing together, and that litigation is just part of that game that gets played like with these companies. And unfortunately, the people that seem to lose out the most are the ones that are the least informed, right? They're the ones that say, well, I just want the cheapest possible coverage. I want to just get in here because I want like the maximum cash flow off of this property. But they don't think about like the 3-year, 5-year, 10-year cycle that if you're inside of this kind of asset classes, that's where the people I see that are actually building real wealth is that they buy assets, they very rarely sell them, and that they're just continuing to stack assets over time and are really interested in how do I have consistency over time, right? They're not really interested in like, is my income going to go up plus or minus $10,000 this year?
Yeah. So what you said before, if I have an umbrella policy with the same company that I've got, you know, real estate insurance with, is that, should I have it with two separate companies in case I need to use that umbrella policy to go after?
No, not really. The issue is only if you think like your insurance carrier is going to be like insolvent, right? Which is the reason why a lot of these people pull out of Florida is because the insolvency issues start becoming like a real issue. It's like, well, we got one event that could bankrupt our company, right? Mm-hmm. And so well, we want to pull that risk off the table, right? And so that's why they won't insure in areas like Florida, right? You know, you end up with like rotating insurance carriers that are willing to risk it for the biscuit, you know, to go into like that kind of market, right? And then they charge for it. But what you all you really need to do from my experience is, you know, you get your minimum coverage you possibly can as your liability coverage in all things, your home, your auto, et cetera. And then you want a super fat umbrella insurance policy, like 1 to 5 million. Because for each $1 million you get in umbrella insurance, it costs you like $400 a year. It's really cheap to get umbrella coverage. So what happens is like if you get a really cheap claim, your just normal policy ends up paying it out, right? But what happens if you get into that car accident that has like everybody in the car ends up in the hospital and permanently disabled and it's millions of dollars, right? Well, your insurance company's playbook is actually to just blanketly deny that claim by any means possible because it's a really expensive claim. And now the business practice of insurance tells them we're better off taking this through a litigation process than we are in paying out the claim, right? It has nothing to do with the legitimacy of the claim. It's just the business statistics of what they should do in that scenario. So, but you as a client and most clients in that circumstance would say, hey, well, we don't have $50,000 to $100,000 to $250,000 to pay litigation attorneys to sue the insurance carriers. So this is actually why you buy umbrella insurance, because the umbrella insurance says, well, you guys have to pay out $5 million. So then, you know, if I'm the party here that is trying to sue the insurance company, I go to an attorney. So litigation attorney says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a third of whatever we can win, or a quarter of whatever we can win from suing the insurance company, but you pay all the fees, the attorney fees, the court fees, and like everything. So what it does is it hedges it so that way I don't have to have a bunch of cash when I need to go sue my insurance carrier because this other attorney will take it on commission in front of all the fees. So that's the way in which you're using the insurance carriers essentially like against themselves in a very strategic use of playing the litigation and insurance game.
Matt Smith asked, what is an umbrella policy? Is this additional cover? So hopefully that answered that. So maybe go back and listen to the recording if needed. And if you got extra questions, pop them in the chat. Let's jump to the next article from United States Real Estate Investor. Maui unites against predatory property investors. This is the one that David brought up earlier. So they are trying to figure out how to keep whatever quote unquote predatory investing practices might be. That was my question, is like, what are they doing? You know, as an investor, I always think, how am I going to help solve somebody's problem, right? So their house burned down in that fire. Like maybe you're coming in and solving a problem for them, but
you know, yeah, what do you guys think? Yeah. The big distinction there is, how do you define predatory, and who's the person that's governing that, right? Because, you know, someone calls us off of a marketing piece and, you know, they just lost their job and they can't afford their mortgage payments anymore. So they can't wait for a real estate agent for whatever reason. And they will just want the cash fast, and that's solving a problem. But someone from the outside might look at that as like, oh, you took advantage of the poor person that lost their job, right? So I think the predatory thing and who's governing that would be the big distinction there. But you're right. what you said, James, is that, you know, people call us in trouble all the time and they need help. And a lot of times it's finances that's going to help them. And so they turn to their, home for financial relief. And it's sad that life comes along and kicks us all in the teeth every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to pull your resources together to solve whatever's ailing you at the moment. And sometimes that is a house. So I don't know what and it's sad what's going on in Hawaii. Oh my God. I mean, the government should just be in there, in my opinion. And let's halt all payments to Ukraine and let's go over and help everyone from Hawaii. Like yeah, this shouldn't even be an issue. Like they shouldn't even have to be worried about predatory investors coming in because we should be taking care of them. But yeah, if
it looks like they're cold calling people, the real estate developers are specifically targeting and like cold calling them at this time. And I think they're just like, can you just give them a break? You know, like their house just literally burned down last week. Like, can we maybe send a postcard or something, like do something else other than just picking up the phone and calling them directly? That's what it looks like that they're targeting specifically in here, and real estate developers who want to buy the big tracts of land and say, okay, there was a row of houses there. Maybe let's make it subdivision now versus what do we want? You know, can we get your house back? So, I'm definitely for the helping because it's like in our communities, like that's the ones where you like to be a part of, right, Matt? It's like the ones who want to go out there. Like, how can we help during this time? Is there something real estate or not real estate related? Like, if the government's not going to send funds, then what can we do? You know, because a lot of like Brandon, what's his name? Brandon Turner. Is out there now. He lives out in Hawaii, you know, from Bigger Pockets and stuff. He's done a lot of the relief efforts and stuff like that too. So it's just, it's that kind of community that you want to band around and be able to help.
Isn't there a broader issue that goes on like in Hawaii as well too, though, where it's almost like there's a cultural separation between like the people that are on island versus like from the mainland, right? And it's like the on island has its own like bubble of community of people that are really tight knit to take care of each other and try to like preserve some type of cultural aspect. And then like the main, from their perspective, from the interviews I saw, that it was like the mainlanders, like the next day after the fire, just like ravaged this whole area. Are like, I'm on vacation, so I'm going to go surfing inside of the waters that are right next to the whole area. And they're like, come on, like, this is not the time for like us to be like expressing ourselves like in this way. You know, there's some sensitivity. And I get it. If you're on vacation and that's your 1 week of the year that you got to go like escape, you know, they're like, hey, I'm going to go surf. You know, like I can see both. I can understand and sensitivity to both people's sets. But I'm wondering if there's if this is like the issue that we're really running into is that like for one group of people, it's their home. For the other group of people, it's just a money making opportunity for us to be able to have greater revenues for a building that we could put up. And, you know, the solution that everybody comes down to is like, well, we need get more government regulation to be able to protect the people from it. But oftentimes the people are saying, well, it's the government's job are also the ones that are saying like, we have too much government regulation, right? So it's this whole conundrum that I think that happens inside of, we don't really have a good solution for this type of issue inside of our culture and our society, which is, well, what do you do when the impacts of a community butt up against the profitability of investors and saying, but we need these two things to work together because if we go too hard for one or the other, we end up losing. Right. And how do we actually thread the needle? I don't have an answer for that. It's just the way I see it.
Right.
More questions. After
Utopia. Right. Yeah. More questions.
Yep. Hey, let's jump into the next one from Forbes. No room at the dorm as college begins. Some students are scrambling for housing. And they brought up that the universities themselves are struggling to meet demand for on-campus housing. And then, you know, some students are having to go live in trailers and hotels because there's a high cost of off-campus rentals. I've seen that. I've got a friend that wanted to buy a place within a couple blocks, just walking distance to Denver University, University of Denver. And finding something that made sense as an investment was just not happening. And the prices are crazy here in Denver, especially around DU. It's just a highly coveted area for people not going to school. So finding affordable student housing is just like, that's a tough tough one. So I've had them set up on a search for, you know, a year. Nothing's popped up that made any sense, you know.
Well, that piggybacks off my point earlier on the supply and demand thing. You know, I mentioned that the peak millennial age is 2 years away from first time homebuyer age, but there's a whole lot of people behind the peak, and Gen Z is bigger than the millennials. So like there's enough, when I say supply and demand, I mean, I just don't want it to be like dismissed as cliche, because it's just so, the demand is so overwhelming. I mean, the people to fill the housing, whether they buy the houses or they rent the houses, is they're already walking the earth. It's not like it's a prediction. They're already here, right? And, you know, as we see them, the millennials go through their 30s, there's Gen Z, they're going to college, right? And so we have this big, giant dearth, big word of the day, a lack of housing. And whether that's a single family home, an apartment building, or a dorm room, we have too many people. So, you know, I don't think there's any better place to be than be a real estate investor right now, as far as for the next 10, 15 years. I think, you know, you could do some major damage in the next 2 or 3 years if you just really focused and started really concentrating on getting control of real estate, whether you have it as just a vacation home or a short-term rental, or if you have it as a traditional rental, and whether that's through a lease option or a seller finance deal or a traditional mortgage, just getting control of controlling the supply, you know, you are primed to really come out a big winner, because the demand, like, it's already walking the earth. It's already here. We don't have to predict it or hope for it.
Yeah, that's why these are such great articles if you are a real estate investor, like this one specifically, because it's like, this is where the demand is. You know, you've got more people coming in than there's houses available, because there's a guy, that a good friend in Richmond, this is all he does. Like, he just buys these and has like 800 units, but, you know, it's not part of the campus, but he's got like 800 student housing units for, you know, Richmond University down there or something. Like, he's got it to where he's just picked that one niche and he's made a lot of money, but then also provide a lot of the housing that they wouldn't be able to, you know, go to school there if they didn't have this. So it's just, it's going, you know, the Wayne Gretzky thing, right? Going to where the puck is. And it's like, this is one of the things, if it's in, you know, an article here, that to be perking your ears up as an investor, okay, do you have a college around you? Is this a problem with yours? Is this something that would be another good exit strategy of like, okay, student housing, this is something that is viable for us as well. So it's just being able to also look at this, not just from what the actual article is saying, but the things that are around it as well too.
There's also strange opportunities that seem to be opening up, like for areas where people are like, well, I don't necessarily have enough experience to be going out and buying, you know, and building something from the ground up, right? Mm-hmm. And there's not inventory I can go out there and just buy. So like, what is it that I do? And I've been seeing more people come through my nexus recently about buying commercial buildings and then being able to essentially turn the commercial buildings and chopping them up into like these little mini apartments, or they have like the offices and doing some creative work that's in there. Course, there's some stuff they have to know about, like how are they going to do the reno, right? But it's a lot less than having to do like a new build. It's a little quicker. Most people seem to actually be a lot really happy just to have a place, even if it was pretty small. And you know, as we saw like from New York City, right, like people actually are okay living in really small places as long as they can be in their own room and it has like everything that they need, and you know, it's in the location that they want, right? So there's interesting dips that happen in some markets that if you can get a little bit creative with what you're looking for, then I think you can actually come out a pretty big winner.
Yep. I'm trying to think, there's a gal, Dolly maybe, that on Ron LeGrand's podcast, he had her on, and she focuses on student housing. And I remember she was talking about how she kind of, because students can trash a place, right? And so she makes it so that the parents are involved. So if the kids screw up, she's, you know, getting a hold of the parents. And then like if one person leaves out of, you know, they'll rent room by room, right? And so if one person leaves, she has it so that the other people that are remaining, they have to go find somebody to replace that other person. And of course, she vets them to make sure they're a good fit. But yeah, it was kind of interesting how she made that her niche and kind of figured out how to get around some of the pain points of student housing.
Yeah, that's
awesome. Well, let's go to the next. What's that, Matt?
I just say, just put the incentives in the right spot, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yep. So from United States Real Estate Investor, revealed inside Trump's real estate earnings versus the future. Said he had a 38% revenue drop and a loss of $600 million in net worth, at least for the Trump organization. It said the decline in revenue can be attributed to factors like the global economic uncertainty, political affiliations and controversies, and the ongoing impact of the pandemic, and then legal challenges faced by the organization. So
I think it's the last one more than anything. He's a motivated seller right now, I think, is what is what's going on.
Right. Yeah.
Life certainly came along and kicked him in the teeth, didn't it?
Yep.
Yep.
Sure did.
But I don't know anything else about that, about his business, though.
Yeah, I don't either. I know he's got Trump Towers around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's got anything outside of hotels, golf courses.
It's one of the issues, you know, not even specifically about Trump, but for anybody, as you start to end up with as a brand, right? And then you're like, your brand recognition becomes so identified with like, what are your assets? And I think that served Trump really well while he was, his brand had like much broader appeal, right? As being a celebrity, doing The Apprentice and doing those kinds of things, right? And like a lot of his net worth and the disclosures that I had saw come through where a lot of it had to do with the valuation of his real estate had to do because of once he threw Trump's name on it, it became so much more valuable that people would actually, you know, pay to have their name on it. And I think once you become like a politician, you're almost guaranteed that half the country isn't going to like you anymore, at least. Right. And so, you know, I think that it was just a good note about for, I think probably for any of us, right, is that when your name becomes associated with your assets and your business, to just be really cautious about what you're going to do, because whatever you're going to do, it's probably going to cost you money. Right. Because you're just going to alienate a certain section of people. And there's just really no way around it.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking that, like, because it seems like the more that gets thrown at him, the more popular he's getting.
Yeah.
But it's not really like popular, because I think you hit it on the head. Like, it's like the country's still divided on him, but I think that just the base is getting more, is digging in more. But so that's why I was gonna. I don't even know why I said that, because I totally retracted that line of thinking, because I think you're right. If you enter the world of politics, you just lost 50% of your market, regardless of which side you're on.
Yep. Well, hey, let's take a break for our next sponsor.
It's me again, Antonio Holman, founder of United States Real Estate Investor and producer of This Month in Real Estate Investing. You know, one of the best ways to increase your company's brand awareness and increase warm leads is to create written content online. But as we know, content creation can be very time consuming and not very cost effective when having to pay professional copywriting fees. It's time to use REI Content Packs. REI Content Packs, done for you content packs, give you the tools, flexibility, and cost-effective way to increase your brand's visibility and online presence without spending hours or even days stressing on what to create. REI Content Packs are a collection of high-quality, ready-made real estate blog articles exclusively created for the real estate investing industry. Can you imagine the possibilities if you could do 2 to 3 more deals per month without increasing your ad spend? REI Content Packs can help you do that. Can you imagine getting unlimited online traffic, increasing your Google ranking, getting more leads, and making more money? REI Content Packs can help you do that too. To get started increasing your brand's content and lessening your workload, head on over to thismonthinrealestateinvesting.com/REI Content Packs. That's thismonthinrealestateinvesting.com/REI Content Packs. It's time to get off the online marketing hamster wheel. Try REI Content Packs today at thismonthinrealestateinvesting.com/REI Content Packs. Now back to James and This Month in Real Estate Investing.
All right. From Benzinga, the collapse of WeWork only heightens investors' commercial office space worries. So I guess vacancy hit a record 13.1%. WeWork hasn't totally crashed, but it's not looking good. I guess they trying to sell off, get out of leases, sell off some stock. And they were talking, I don't know if you guys know what this is, a 1-for-40 reverse stock split. I don't know anything about that.
That's where they take like 40 stock and then combine it into one. It's to raise your stock price if you have like a stock price that's tumbling. Like if you have a stock price that's getting too high, you'll split it to make it lower so you can have more like lower the market demand, right? And then okay. That's your reverse. So it's not a good sign when a company has to say like, well, we need to inflate our stock price to make it look like we're not a penny stock, mm-hmm. right? Because once you look like you're a penny stock, all of a sudden people are like, oh, you must be really risky to invest in.
Yeah. And they are.
Well, you get caught up in these supply demand curves on the wrong side of it. Matt will tell you that's a bad idea. Don't be on that side of it.
You know that there's a friend of Mercedes, my wife's, and she's here in Vegas, and her family owns quite a bit of commercial real estate. And we were out to dinner a couple months ago, and I'd asked her, because I don't really, that's out of my realm of expertise, and I just asked her like, so I hear like residential is going to be okay, but commercial is really suffering, and I know you got a lot of that. And she says, I don't even know what people are talking about. We have maximum occupancy over here. So I think it's just certain parts of the country are grasping or grabbing the headlines that are, some parts are really suffering. Because she says she's doing just fine here. And I think half her family owns a bunch more. I think she said Florida. Don't quote me on that. But so I think we see this in the residential market as well. It's just going very – real estate is kind of going back more to the location thing. And there's not a national housing market. And I think based on what she just shared with me, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, it's probably the same with commercial as well. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen to the commercial space. I think, James, you're probably the closest and the best answer I've heard is it's not going anywhere, but it might get repurposed.
Yeah, we've talked about that on the show. A lot of converting office to residential, converting correct. Office to light industrial. There's challenges of doing that, but there's definitely opportunity out there. So with your friend that you had dinner with, did what kind of commercial is she in? I might have missed that.
Office space.
She is in office space,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she has no problems here in Vegas.
Interesting, yeah. Because that's the hardest hit sector of commercial, right? So.
Right. Well, Vegas is one of those cities, and there's a few others, but I know here it's where a lot of the exodus from California has come. And here in California specifically, they haven't just brought their families, they have brought their businesses here as well. So that might be the contributing factor of why that's a special case. And I don't know how that impacts or how it relates to the rest of the country, but for here, she said she doesn't have an issue.
In the article, it mentioned companies like Convene looking to fill the gap with hospitality services and adopting a more disciplined approach to growth. Are you guys familiar with Convene or what they do? So, first time I've heard of them.
What type of hospitality? Does that mean short-term rental? Is that what that's code for?
I mean, we're talking commercial space, so I'm not sure. Have to look into that more. I just didn't have time to dig in that far. Let's go to the next article from WCJB TV 20 News. Ocala ranked number one city in Florida to have a housing crisis. Real estate experts react. David, you're in Florida, right?
Yeah, I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
Are
you familiar with Ocala?
No, I live in Orlando. I've been here for less than 2 years. I love it down here. Oh, yeah. It's great. But I mean, for me, I'm working nationally because I'm virtual, just like everything. Like everything that we're doing here and talking about, I'm like, yeah, I don't need to go to an office space. I don't need WeWork. I don't need that type of thing. You know, it's like, and I think that's a lot of my generation too. You know, millennials, like we were talking about that, is like, yeah, I'm renting and I'm working virtually. So it's like, if there's going to be a housing crisis or something, like, I don't know for Ocala if there's going to be a housing crisis just because they've got too much or too little demand. But there was a crazy stat that I've heard just about the state of Florida, like 1,000, like netting 1,000 new people a day or something in 2022. It was something, you know, absolutely insane like that. Yeah. So it's like, I know that this market is crazy, but then I also know too, like with all that we've been talking about, like I fall into that very stereotypical millennial. I like to work from home. I like to rent because I don't have to worry about all that other stuff, and I could just pour into the business. I could pour into the things that I'm doing. So that's kind of the stance here. And then being a resident of Florida, I definitely like living here. I don't like the hurricane. It just came through last night, but I'm inland too, so it didn't really affect me much more than rain and the dark skies, but I can't really speak to Ocala.
Was that Hurricane Idalia?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It just came through.
I never heard that name until we're looking for a lease option buyer. And we have an Idalia. I'm like, I've never heard that name. And all of a sudden, she's got her own hurricane.
Right.
Yeah, that article was talking about how some experts are saying that rising costs of mortgages and interest rates are making things less affordable, and it's going to really cause a problem.
Does it say what's unique to that part? Because those things are impacting the whole country.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like right. I see that here, but I see that in the other cities, like right near me as well too. So yeah. I don't know why they singled this one out.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a gal that was kind of taking the other tact, saying it. She didn't see any problem with it.
I'm pretty sure that was like the governor, or I mean the mayor or something. So of course she's going to say, no, it's fine. Everything's fine here. You know, right. We're good. Please come. Like,
or it was just happening. A slow news cycle. So they had to share something.
Right. Yep.
Exactly. Because we've never seen that before.
All right. From Benzinga, Warren Buffett's $31,500 house, now worth $1.44 million, says renting would have earned more.
Yep, of course he says that. Like, even though it's like still his third best investment of all time or whatever, it's like, yeah, but renting would have made me more over these years. It's like, well, yeah, you bought it when you were five, you know, and it's in your 80 or 90 years old now. So it's still a pretty great return. But I think that was just hilarious digging into that one. It's like, yeah, of course renting would have returned you more than
what
you made here.
He bought it for what?
31.5.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how much is it worth now?
1.44 million.
1.44. Minus the what? The 35 whatever? What did you say? What did you buy it for?
31. 31.5.
Yep. 31,000, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
1958. And so how long has he
purchased in 1958?
Okay. And then we are in
2023.
Very good. So that would, so we made 1.48. All right. You guys can talk about something else while I figure this out for you.
I was like, we're turning this into a workshop.
The actual math here. It's like, you got real awesome. Estate investors here saying, okay, well, what was this?
I saw that and I was like, you know what? I think, because I've done a couple of videos on why I think your primary residence is a terrible investment.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, investment is what I'm saying. Like,
yes, you know, investment.
That's the operative word. So if he's in there for six, and this is, and I just want to see, put this to the test on someone who has, like, you know, added a couple zeros to their value. Was it really? I mean, he said it was, so I'm sure it probably was, right? Fine.
Probably because he would have made the money plus the equity. You know, that's probably what he was thinking.
Cited opportunity cost for the money that he put into right. The property.
Yeah. Right? He would have put it back into the stock market, right? So you're talking about like compounding.
Yep, exactly.
Like probably over time, and like, how are you going to compete with that?
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, I get it, dude. I was like, what am I supposed to buy, like a quadplex for my first property to get rental income and then stay in there until I die? And then I tell my grandkids, like, what a great investment I made by raising them in an apartment, you know, right. Like as I'm sitting here on millions of dollars, like what? It's like a crazy bubble to live in where it's like, right. You know, every move I make is about the dollar I'm going to make when I'm dead.
You know? And that's like Warren Buffett's whole thing. That's why it makes him the anomaly. It's like, okay, you've done something that no other investor's done. You've rode the stock market for 70 years or whatever. It's like, yeah, of course. So like, if you would have put this in, and that's what every big personal finance guru, Dave Ramsey, you know, like, oh, buy term, invest the difference. It's like, if people actually had the discipline of a Warren Buffett, yeah, that makes sense. you know, that type of stuff.
I met one of these guys though, but he was an apartment investor.
Awesome, Dave. I've never seen you so emotional.
That was great. And for some reason, this was the topic that had everybody blowing up on it. But I met one of these guys. He was an apartment investor. He was worth something like $400 million, started from the very beginning with like absolutely nothing. Right. This dude rolled up into the dinner though with like a beat up like Mercedes diesel. Right. And yeah. he's like dressed in like just whatever kind of clothes, doing whatever. Right. And I was like, is this guy just like this here? Cause he's trying to play like low key. And he's like, no, he never spends money on anything. Any apartments that he's bought, he's always just taking the money out and bought more apartments with it. He's got his like kids in there, like running the business. And I was like, that's amazing that you have a $400 million net worth being raised in a trailer park as a kid. Hands down, I'm impressed, right, with what you've been able to do. Also, I feel like we should go have a talk about what the purpose of life is.
Right. Yes. Oh, man. If you ever read the book, The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel, like that's such a great book. And he puts a lot of stuff about Warren Buffett in there of like, you don't want to take his advice. He's not the typical person. You know, like you want to take what the average investor who does actually well. And we're not talking about the average investor who loses, but like the average investor, what they do over the course of time and like study them and their what they're doing. And then if you want to go to one niche, you can, you like to Warren Buffett, but that's extreme. And like you were saying, like, what's the purpose of life if you're only going to focus on this one area and nothing else? And it's just like, that's what it's going to balloon to. But that's that one really opened my eyes.
I know. Like, who hurt you as like a kid, you know, to tell you like, you know, the only way you're going to earn my love is if you're worth a bunch of money.
Right.
Like, I'll do anything for it. I'll sacrifice everything.
Yeah.
But still came up. He made $21,000 a year on that. So that's a 67% return on it, but that's not compounding.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Where so if he gets if his compounded
over 65 years, then that probably would have been, I didn't do that math, but yeah, maybe he would have been done better if it compounded.
Well, and I think he's averaged, I think, over 20% in his funds. Like, I think that's his average for the last however many years. So, yeah, even at a lower percentage, but compounding is going to totally eclipse just a straight 67% return every year.
All right, I'm just going to go ahead and say that I think Matt just proved Warren Buffett wrong and is like a much better investor at calculating the numbers.
That's what he did. That's right.
Oh, man. That's good. All Matt stuff. This is why we love him.
I didn't really like to see that if that was the case. It's such a big gap. It's like I've never worked with that type of return before. So if we just did zero, $1, it's over 65 years.
That's going to figure it out. I'm still going to figure it out.
So what do you say, David? 20%?
Yeah, I think it's more like 28, but I'll say 20. Just do 20% compounding for the last.
It won't even let me do.
It's too big.
It's too big. Like the calculator won't even let me do 65 years. It only does let me do 50 years. But that 50 years is 640,000. So 15 more years, yeah, that would have crushed 1 million for.
The one, yeah, because at that point you're so big, it snowballs.
Way yeah, at the end is where it's all made. So, yeah.
Exactly.
He's right.
There, he just proved Warren right. So, good job.
Yeah, if you got 65 years to spare, then you can beat him too.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. That's his core power, is being able to be in it for the long term.
Right. Well, I mean, I think compound interest is a big scam because most people just don't make enough to save enough for the math to pan out and the big giant magic trick at the end. I mean, your life is over by the time you get to benefit from it.
And the discipline that you have to have to not touch it and to be able to have it compound over and over again.
And the fortune to not ever have to dip into it for a life emergency.
Exactly.
Right. Hey, exactly. David, I love you.
We think a lot.
Yeah.
Don't compound interest, compound assets.
Compound the assets. I see guys do it like in a combination of actually two different strategies. I don't know if you guys see this or if you practice it yourself, but the investors that we work with, what the game that we're playing in the very beginning is typically how to get them to like 120 to 150K of passive income from real estate that's managed for them. So they have time and they hit like whatever their number is to say, cool, I got FU money now comparatively to like leave my job, do whatever. I can go do whatever, right? And then like what seems to happen is that most of them at that point are like, I'm actually okay chilling here. I actually don't need to go ahead and start, you know, an extra $5,000 or $10,000 a year is probably takes me quite a bit of work to increase my passive income. It isn't gonna make that much big of a difference to me. But I really want to focus on this point is compounding returns to my net worth. Because if I can get my net worth up high enough, then I can get less returns on my money, which means I'm in more conservative asset classes. And that's how I bulletproof my finances for life. Yeah. And so it's like this, I think what the modern investor is starting to figure out is there's like a short-term run game that you do to the passive income to your lifestyle. And then there's a long-term net worth game that actually just says life actually doesn't get that much better after this. It actually is about the same. And then I'm just going to bulletproof it with increasing my net worth.
Yep. Yeah.
It's also such a faster path too, focusing, because you know, the traditional thing is that let's save enough money so we have this mountain of money so the interest and dividends will create the passive income that I can live on, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a 40-year plan. But if you took that and just kind of said, okay, I'm not going to build the mountain to create the stream, I'm going to focus on creating the stream first, that's a 4-year plan, yeah. Right? And now you have your excess of your stream can now build the mountain for you, like kind of what you just said, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way I see it, Matt. I bet that's actually what you're doing a lot with your business and the people that you're helping. As if I had to take a guess, is that the way that you guys would
probably? Well, yeah, you just got to like, it's just but it's such a paradigm shift, right? Because, you know, saving is good. And that's what you do. You save for a rainy day and you put it all in a 401k and, you know, you do all of that. And it's just like, well, yeah, I mean, but your life's going to be over by the time it works out.
Yeah. And I was looking at Antonio here in the chat talking about like you need 20 million to live a life doing whatever you want without worrying about money. And what I'm seeing is like people are doing that with like 2 to 3 and like appropriately positioned 2 to 3 million are able to do it. And sometimes net worths are a lot lower if they're doing what Matt's talking about, which is they got really good at how to control assets. So their net worth isn't very high, but their cash flows are strong because they're controlling monthly income that'll come in. And I'm a huge proponent of that because I 100% agree with Matt is that if you can actually figure out the game to make that happen, what really happens is you create the space, the energetic and thought space in your life because you're not being pushed by money all the time. And then you're able to think so much more clearly and strategically about how are you going to get those big jumps in net worth, which oftentimes can take 6 months, a year, 2 years before they pan out because it takes a lot of work to get big net worth jumps. There's just all kinds of benefits of who we are as people and how do we work and how do our minds work that I think really layer into the strategy Matt's talking about.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know David's got to run here pretty quick. So let's just real quick jump in to the last. Well, we have two items from United States Real Estate Investor, New York City Airbnb listings vanish as regulations tighten. So... That's happening all over the place. I don't know if you guys are in short term.
There's a lot of different ways to, and this is how I've gotten around it here in Las Vegas, is that they're pretty strict on their short term rentals here. I think just as you have to be a resident to own it, one, and a limit to 5, and then you know you can't be within 1,000 feet from another short term rental. And so you have to, and then you have to get the business license. You got to redo the business license. So there's all these things if the property falls in a short classification of a short-term rental. But it's really if you can bypass all of that, if you just look at what the definition of a short-term rental is, and here in Vegas or all in Nevada, it's 30-day stays or shorter. And so if you focus on a marketplace that has at least 31-day stays, none of that applies. And that's how we've gotten around it. And what I've come to learn is I don't even want to do short-term rentals anymore. I don't want to be on Airbnb for like the weekend here at the Raider game or anything like that. Because there's massive turnover. It really eats into your profits too. And you got all the restrictions. But there's such a better marketplace out there. There's probably another, you know, 50 places I can think of where you get better clients, better tenants, whether it's the military base or the hospitals. One thing that all of our short-term rentals are on right now is, and this is a freebie for everybody, Ale Solutions, A-L-E Solutions. I'm not affiliated with them. It's not an affiliate link or anything like that. But what they do, they place people for insurance companies. So if someone's house burns down or a pipe busts and the house floods, that insurance company has to place that family somewhere while those repairs are being done. And those are typically 2-3 month stays. And that happens all across the country. So you don't need to be next to Disneyland or next to a college for that to be a good Airbnb property. It's all over the place. So I don't know what the restrictions are in New York, but that's certainly the workaround. I probably shouldn't have said that out loud because maybe Vegas will change that. But that's certainly the workaround, and I found it to be a much better business.
Yeah. Hey, since David's got to run, let's just do our fun news item from Inman, the 20 biggest residential real estate transactions of 2023 so far. I'll just call out a few. Jay-Z and Beyonce bought a $200 million property in Malibu. Whew. Ben Affleck and J-Lo, $61 million in Beverly Hills. Mark Wahlberg, $55 million.
He just moved next door to me, by the way.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's about half a mile away, but it's next door.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's our show for the month. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Jason Palliser's two-day investment blueprint and REI content packs. Again, thanks to our guests, Scott Royal Smith, Matt
Terrio,
and David Richter. In that order, why don't you guys go ahead and let people know how they can connect with you, and we can sign off.
Yeah, so best way to connect with me is Royal Legal, my website, royallegalsolutions.com. On there, we have our primary video, which is here's how we work as a full service company to make you the CEO of a wealth building company that we build and manage for you. So we work with investors on being able to serve as that one-stop shop. And then if it makes sense to you from that video, then you can schedule a call directly with our paralegal team to talk to you about next steps. We don't use salespeople at any part of our process. Everybody's a professional that anybody speaks to working with us. And then we also have something, a freebie for everybody here on this show, which is called The Vault. It's in the top right-hand corner of our website on royallegalsolutions.com. And in there, you'll get access to 11 eBooks, hundreds of hours of videos, everything that's asset protection, estate planning, tax, insurance, all the educational content that we offer that we have is all organized in there. For everybody, absolutely for free. So best place is just royallegalsolutions.com. That takes you everywhere you need to go to get educated and take next steps if it makes sense for you.
Great, thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, everything about us is now at epicrealestate.com. We're essentially out of the big ticket, high, very expensive coaching thing. Mercedes and I are pretty much probably about 90% of our time is back into our real estate investing business. But we are always looking for partners. And so we set up a nice little portal for people to come through, and it's essentially free. But if you can kind of get through that and get trained the way that we buy houses, you could potentially be a partner. And that's at epicearnwhileyoulearn.com.
Cool. So you can go to simplecfo.com/freebies, F-R-E-E-B-I-E-S. If you want a one pager, if you've ever heard of the book Profit First or you've never heard of it, it's literally like a 5-step if you just want to get up and running and where you actually keep more of the money you're making. It just gives you the high level overview. I also give you my book too, if you're in the real estate investing world, Profit First for Real Estate Investing, on that link as well too. So you can at least dive in and get the actual value of, okay, how do I make sure I'm not just making money, but feeling broke, and where's every dollar going in the business and helping you get to where you want to be, keeping more money. That's simplecfo.com/freebies.
I approve of David Richter's message, by the way, in it. That book was promoted to me well before I knew David multiple times. And it just sounded like a boring subject, accounting, blah. But I listened to that on a road trip from Oregon down to Los Angeles, and it changed my entire life. And I was so mad at myself for putting that off so long. So David went out and made it specifically for real estate investors in association with the original author. And it's just it's a blessing. So go check David's stuff out for sure.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate Great. You.
Thanks, guys. Again, I'm your host, James Brown, and I teach people how to make double-digit returns through safe, secure, stress-tested real estate investments. Go to hybridinvestor.vip to learn more. Also, a huge thanks to our founder and producer, Antonio Holman, in the background, making this all work. He's with United States Real Estate Investor. Follow and subscribe to This Month in Real Estate Investing on YouTube at youtube.com/@UnitedStatesREI or your favorite podcast app. And if you run across any interesting news events or good guest suggestions, feel free to share by emailing antonio@unitedstatesrealestateinvestor.com. And remember, when one door closes, another door opens to financial freedom. Thanks, guys. This was awesome.